Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shante of Positive Light Ministry. A shout out to Willis and Shante's, whose 10-minute play, Kiara and Wendell, was selected for the 10-minute play festivals coming up this weekend. We have a little bit more to say about that. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you from Skid Row Studios. And sitting in for my co-host is Tyrone Robinson.
Hey, Melvin.
Hey, Tyrone. I do have my co-host sitting here, just came in, Ms. Earlene Anthony. Now, hello. Call in number is 800-893-9562. Listen to us live or download our show and any past show by Googling in skitrow.la and hit Qumran Report. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, we've talked to actress Iman Milner, just recently seen in the Rovers production of Bronzeville, and also in the studio, singer Isaac Clay. But first, I would like to update you on the prison hunger strike that is protesting long-term solitary confinement, which is torture. Now, prison officials are grappling with starvation-related elements among hunger-striking prisoners who have refused to eat for nearly 6 weeks to protest the state's solitary confinement policies. As the hunger strike enters its 40th day on Friday, dozens of inmates have been sent to hospitals or prisons' infirmaries, and officials are bracing for more illness among the 118 prisoners who have not eaten since the strike began. The hunger strike began July the 8th, 2013. This is day 43. We will keep you updated. Now, I am delighted to have with us in the studio actress Iman Milner, just recently seen in the Rovers Theater productions of Bronzeville at the Los Angeles Theater Center. She's a graduate of the University of Minnesota Guthrie Theater BFA training program. Her professional credits include Sylvia in L.A. Shakespeare's Company production of Two Gentlemen of Verona, Showtime's House of Lies, the hit web series Awkward Black Girls, as well as various short films, theater productions. Iman, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you for having me, Melvin. Yeah.
So glad to have you here. Can you tell our listening audience about your background and how did you get off into acting?
Well, I am from Detroit originally. My father was a playwright, a Broadway playwright, and my mother is a professional dancer. So I guess I kind of fell in between the two of them. Mm-hmm. I grew up backstage as a Broadway baby for the first couple of years and then moved to Detroit as a kid. And just, I think the first show I did, I was 8, and it was my dad's show. Part of it was that, you know, my dad needed something to do with me while he was doing the show. And there was a role for a little girl in it, so he gave me the role so that I could spend time with him, and then I wouldn't be bothering him during rehearsals. And I just got the acting bug from there.
Which one of the shows was?
It was called Loose Transitions.
Yeah.
Or Urban Transitions, Loose Blossoms, that's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I must mention that you are the daughter of the great playwright Ron Milner, mm-hmm. who I knew back in Detroit, Michigan, when I was with the African Renaissance Theater Companies in the 70s.
Wonderful.
And that's what I'm going to do. Do you do any writing, too, plays?
I do writing. I don't know. I have a hard time calling myself a writer because of who my father was.
Yeah.
But I write. Short films, and I own a magazine, so I do a lot of journalism writing, mm-hmm. interview writing, feature writing.
Yeah, we want to talk about the magazine, too. Have a chance to tell us everything about that. What's the name of the magazine?
The magazine is called Edge Magazine,
uh-huh.
and it's at edgemagazinesite.com, so you can check it out there. And mm-hmm. basically, we feature all minorities in entertainment, So mm-hmm. from sports to film to theater to fashion, style, music, mm-hmm. A lot of athletes. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Yeah, I know I heard from some of your cast members hit me back with an email. I know they're listening. Well, they may call
they
in.
They just don't call in.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. What is your process for learning lines?
You know, it's weird for me. I have never had a problem memorizing lines. I remember playing a memory game with my dad when I was little. It was like a card game, and you flip over a card, and you flip it back over, and then you have to find where it was. Mm-hmm. And I was always just really good at it. So honestly, I mean, after a table read and taking it home and reading it through once or twice, mm-hmm. that's it. I'm pretty much off book. Mm-hmm. And when I audition, when I have sides, I can get them down in mm-hmm. an hour or two. So it's really, I don't know what it is. It's just, I don't really have a process for it. I know that I'm lucky in that way. I know a lot of people have a problem with learning lines, but I just never have had a problem with it, so mm-hmm. I don't
now,
have a
what's your process for developing your character? When you first get a script, do you start from the first thing you do is what? You read it through or what?
Yeah, I read it through a lot. I mean, I'm classically trained, so I think for me a lot of times the words are the way into the character for mm-hmm. me. So I try to read as much as I can and determine what's said about my character. So I read a lot of the other lines, things that are said about me, things that are said to me, and then things that I say, and try to, from there, start to put together a character bio, mm-hmm. Just a background story on my character, who they are, where they come from, why they say the things they say, why they do the things they do. So I try to go in and connect any dots that are left, you know, mm-hmm. kind of trailing out there from the script. And then from there, I go into the body and the voice, and if any of those things are mentioned in the script, I try to match them up. But if they're not, mm-hmm. then I determine, based on what I've looked at, who this person is and how they would walk and how they would sound and all that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're dealing in both film and theater. How do you contrast the two? Is it your approach the same with both film, a film script and a stage play?
Yeah, I mean, the approach is the same. I think that the process of letting it go is different because in theater you have to take up so much space. You know, you have the whole stage, then you have the whole audience, and you have all their bodies and all of their heat and everything right there. And it's one of those things where all you get immediate confirmation if you're doing well, if you're not. But then with film, it's very small. You know, mm-hmm. everything has to be, all that external work has to be happening, but you're only showing this small amount, these little bitty things. So mm-hmm. I think that's the difference, is that in theater, you have to kind of bring that external work, but you kind of let it go and you play on the internal parts, the body, the this, the that. Mm-hmm. And with film, you're marrying so much of that together because you're working in this really small space and people have to be able to see all these little minute details. So mm-hmm. you have to make sure those details are there for them mm-hmm. to see.
Okay. Now, what advice would you give young actors trying to break into the business?
I think the biggest thing, I guess two things. This is one thing that I didn't really understand until I moved to LA from school. But I remember one of my acting teachers used to always say, find a hobby. Find something else that's not this, that can keep you kind of sane and that can make you happy in the times when you're not working. Because what happens is that once you're out of school, you know, where you're guaranteed parts and you're guaranteed work and you're always being creative and you're taking classes, you kind of have to adjust to the fact that it's not like that. You become more of a professional auditioner than you do a professional actor. Mm-hmm. So you got to find ways to keep yourself creative. So even if it's finding other talents, that other things that you're good at, and using some of those things to open up doors for you in what you really want to be doing, which for me was the magazine. I met a lot of people through the magazine that I probably wouldn't have met otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to reach out to them to help me with certain projects or, you know, bounce ideas off of them. And I didn't know them. I wouldn't have known them without the magazine. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, like, find something that's interesting, even if it's just working out or, you know, kickboxing or something, like something that you can always come back to where your mind doesn't always have to be on acting, because that's tiring. It can be very tiring and you don't want anything to cut into your creative process because you're tired or depressed or, you know, whatever it may be. So I say find something that you can do that can get your mind off of it, even if it's for an hour or two a day. Mm-hmm. And then second, I think that you just have to love it. You have to have a passion for it. I don't care what anybody says, you have to be good at it. Or it's a disrespect to the art. And mm-hmm. I think that if you really love it, you don't want to be disrespectful to the art. You want to honor it. You want to make sure that it's always held to a high esteem. And I think a part of that is making sure you're always prepared when you walk into a room, mm-hmm. whenever you have an opportunity, giving your 100% to it because someone else wants that opportunity and you have it. So, yeah, I think just always honoring it and treating it with respect by being prepared and doing your work and mm-hmm. and getting training. You know, it's not as easy as it looks.
What's the biggest challenge for African-American female actresses? Is it different from just a regular actress out here, the same challenge? Or?
I think the biggest challenge is that there's just not enough stories. You know, I think that people's problems with certain films like The Help or The Butler or this, I don't think they would exist if there were just more stories being told. Mm-hmm. So I think that what it does is it creates this idea, this kind of desperation of like every single thing I have to go in for or whatever because there's just not enough. And then we're all fighting for this not enough. So you don't get to have a lot of times that camaraderie between actresses of color because it's like there's only two or three roles that come out that we can actually play that are actually written for women of color. Now, you may be able to break some barriers and go in for characters who aren't written for women of color and book it. Great. But the roles that are out there that are written for us are so small. So you go into this room and you're fighting, not just as a black woman, but as an Asian American woman, a Latin American woman, like all of us, we're all fighting for these ethnic roles. And so, yeah, there's not enough stories out mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. So you feel limited. But I think right now with the internet and, you know, web series and all those type of things, people are starting to create their own work, which is kind of cool. And you can shoot a short film and you can enter into festivals on your own. You don't need anyone mm-hmm. to help you. You can get it some traction on the internet and you can take it from there. So I would say the hardest thing, yeah, is that there's just not enough opportunities. And so it leaves you trying to, yeah, you're either sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring, which I don't suggest, mm-hmm. or you're getting with your friends and you're making projects and you're doing things. You're learning how to produce. You're learning how to direct. You're buying cameras and equipment so that you can make mm-hmm. things happen for yourself.
Have you seen The Butler yet?
I did. I saw it on was Friday, I think.
Oh, yeah. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a good story. I think it's a good story. It's an interesting story. Mm-hmm. But again, I just think that because there's not enough stories told that we get stuck having to tell the same range. There's like a certain range of stories that we're stuck having to tell, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And although I think the actors did a good job, I think that it'd be great to see some of those same actors be able to tell some other types of stories.
Now, do you think the dynamics of the story would have changed if, the Butler, if they had two sons, mm-hmm. if they had a daughter that was in the mix also?
I don't know. I don't know that it would have mattered as much as mm-hmm. I thought the only dynamic missing was that it could have been perhaps done by people who are less recognizable. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes, no matter even if you are just a film fan like I am, and you understand that this person's playing a character, that it changes the situation when you're looking at Oprah and you're looking at, you know, these people who are so well known. And I don't think that always serves the story. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it takes away from the story.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Tyrone, you did some research over there. Oh,
I really like your website.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, imanmiller.com. I highly recommend people to take a look at it.
I built that website by myself.
That's very good.
I did.
It's very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your experiences in the UK.
Oh, yeah. I went to London for a semester and some change, and it was actually really amazing. I think that part of the reason why we're seeing so many British actors come over here and do so well is because of the way they train. They train very in that detailed manner that I was talking about with film. So every single part of your body becomes the character. And I don't think that sometimes we get that here in America. I think we kind of do a very we learn like Stanislavski and Meisner and all those things. But I think the way they teach it, they always hook it to the language, always. And I think that's just amazing because I think what it does is that it creates a need for the language that you're saying. And that's who we are as human beings. Like when you're talking, when you're trying to get something across to someone, mm-hmm. you're having a conversation, even if it's a everyday, you know, conversation about sports or whatever, there's a need there to make your point, you know? And I think that that's what they teach you. Every single thing, there's a need. When you pick up something, why are you picking it up? You're not just having a drink of water. Why? How does your character do that? How do they take the water, the top off the water bottle? It's very specific. You know, I take a top off a water bottle a certain way because my hands are small, because this is how I saw my mom do it, because whatever. Mm-hmm. And you have to fill in every single little thing. And I think that that training is really amazing. So, no, I had a really great time. It was my first time in Europe at all. And because I got a lot of free time because we would go to classes and then we would have these breaks, which I think is great, too. Even there, they with their students, you know, you go to high school and that's kind of considered university. That's considered college. And your college really is experience in life. Like, you go there and a lot of them are traveling around the world. Mm. That's their college because they really believe that experience and life is a better teacher than sitting in a classroom sometimes. And I think it makes for a well-rounded artist as well because you get to see so much of the world. And so you get to bring that to your work. So I really enjoyed it. I took classes at the Globe, which is Shakespeare's Globe. That was great to be able to work in a space like that because your instrument has to be so trained to be in that space. Otherwise, no one can hear you. Like, it's a huge space with an open ceiling. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if a loud bird comes across that ceiling, they can't hear you unless you're really, really hooked up. And you can't be really hooked up unless you're really invested in what's going on stage. So that was interesting. We did a lot of mask work. We did a lot of dialect work. And yeah, but I think the best part about that experience was getting to see the other parts. I was living in London, but I got to see Italy. I got to see Spain. I got to see France. Like, I got to see all these different places that I had never been. And I think it made me a more well-rounded person.
Oh, beautiful.
Beautiful.
Okay, I'll tell you what, let's take a short break and hear some voices from the community, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Bronzeville.
Okay.
Okay, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson. Welcome to the Qumran Report. I'm over here at the Vortex, and a great event, great fundraising charity event going on this weekend, and I'm speaking with one of the artists here. Who am I speaking with?
Layla Liliana Garro.
Okay, can you tell us what is your participation this weekend? What are you doing?
I work with the woman who spearheaded this event, Samantha Ciora. We work together on a performance troupe called Les Sirènes, mm-hmm. Les Sirens. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be performing tonight at midnight. We have it's kind of like a circus burlesque variety show. Mm-hmm. Very sexy, very very dramatic, mm-hmm. kind of creepy. Yeah.
So what kind of artistic background, first of all, where's your home and how did you get off into performing this?
I was born and raised in New York City, mm-hmm. and I went to a performing arts high school when I was 15. I studied drama, theater, mm-hmm. and then when I got out of high school, I started auditioning for film. I started working in films in New York, and I did that for about 4 years, and then I was in college at the same time doing both. Mm-hmm. And then when I graduated, I decided to come out to L.A. and seek my career mm-hmm. as an artist.
So you're planning on an actress in film? You're going to produce, write, or what?
Well, it looks like to get a career in film, you really have to be in production these days. Or maybe it was always like that. But I'm really learning in L.A. more than anywhere else mm-hmm. what it means to create your own projects. And working with Samantha has been a lot about that, mm-hmm. about making your own stuff happen. Mm-hmm. So
great. Now, how did can you explain exactly what you would be performing tonight?
Sure. So we have a lira set at the beginning of the show, which I will be performing. Lira is a very classical circus apparatus. Mm-hmm. It's a metal hoop that's suspended in the air, So I dance on that for about 5 minutes. Then we transition into some fire dancing and grindcore, which is a kind of dance. It's very contemporary kind of invention. Dancing with metal sheets on your costume. And you take a power grinder, which is a power tool, and you grind the power tool on the metal, and it makes sparks. So, yeah, that's basically what we're doing.
So when that happened with lights, would that be in the dark?
Yeah, it's got to be in the dark for you to really get the effect of the sparks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're looking forward to it. Tell us your name again, your organization, your contact information for those that want to get you to perform.
Layla Liliana Garo is my name. Check me out on IMDb, Layla with an I, Garo, G-A-R-R-O. I'm also on Facebook, and yeah, those are the two places that are best to find me.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Qumran Report. Hey, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Qumran Report, and I'm over here at the Vortex, and they're doing this fundraising event, and who am I speaking with here?
Hi, my name is Andrea. I'm from L.A.
Mm-hmm. Andrea, can you? I saw some of your work. It's great. Can you tell us a little about your background, where you're from, how you get off into art?
Sure. I'm from L.A., and I was born in Cerritos, California, and grew up in a fairly privileged, in a privileged childhood. I was able to learn all different types of arts and musics and all sort of different artistic and language traditions. And I credit my parents for being able to provide that environment for me. So I was able to start painting and creating art from a very young age.
Now, how do you describe your particular type of art?
I would say it's a blend of a lot of my favorite passions. It's very heavily figurative and slightly abstract. I like to do digital, and I'm into data visualization, so I'm interested in creating an artistic, a visual language to describe the mixture of different layers of reality on the physical layer, as well as the information and emotional layer, layers that we usually can't see.
Now, how did you get involved with the event over here with Samantha? You ever worked with them before?
I heard about this event through friends of friends, and I was always looking. I'm always open to different opportunities to life paint, just to get involved with creative events, and I just contacted the organizer. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now for those who would like to get in touch with you, your contact information to find out about your work.
Yeah, I have a website. It's my name, Andrea, A-N-D-R-E-A, and then T-S-E-N-G.com. Once again, that's A-N-D-R-E-A-T-S-E-N-G.com. That's my website with more of my work.
Okay, one more question I want to ask you. Do you have any art shows coming up in the future where you're displaying your work?
The next upcoming one is the Burning Man Festival in Nevada. And after that, that's completely open. I'll be around probably.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. Andrea, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Qumran Report. Okay, we're back in the studio with Imam Milner. And Imam, how did you first get involved with the Roby Theater Company?
My godfather, Glenn Turman, he's another actor. When I first got out here, he was like, you should really hook up with a theater so that you can, you know, kind of have a place to work in between. And I was like, okay. And he gave me a list of theaters, and I came in for Ben and auditioned. And he brought me in for readings, like, you know, of new scripts they were working on. And, yeah, and the first production I actually did with the Roby was Bronzeville when they took it up to Manzanar. And I had never done the show. Everybody who was working on the show had already been in it, and it was my first time. And we went up there for, I think, like a week and did the show and came back. And it was a pretty good experience. I really enjoyed myself, and I enjoyed the show. But Yeah, that's how. How
is it working with Ben as a director?
I think Ben gives people the freedom to kind of create, bring their process to it. And though he has a vision for what he sees, he allows you to kind of get your vision out too, which I think is a very selfless quality in a director. Because a lot of directors come in, they have their vision, and that's it. And you kind of have to just get with the program. Uh-huh. But I think he allows you to, figure it out for yourself, which is nice.
Yeah, we want to shout out to Aaron, too. Aaron Jennings, he was supposed to be here, couldn't make it tonight. We want to do a show on Aaron, too. Hope you're listening to us, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Aaron.
Now, what are your thoughts on your role in Bronzeville?
I love Princess just because she has this really, like, naive and beautiful quality. She doesn't see the world in this, I have a word in my head and it won't come out. But she just has this very, like, naive and open quality to see in the world. She really believes that if people are good, then that's it. That's good enough. And anything else facing her and the world at large can be overcome by people just being good and getting past things like race and, culture and all those things. And I think that even today, someone like that would be hard to come by. Mm-hmm. She has not at all been touched by that life and that time period and racial tensions or anything of that sort. And she should be, because she's coming from the South. But she just believes that people are good, and she believes in love and goodness. I don't know. But I think that she's a lot smarter than she gets credit for from the mm-hmm. rest of the family. I think she's very much a woman, and she knows, she knows more about life than they think she does. But I think that she chooses to have an outlook that's very positive and very, that surpasses her circumstances, which I think is admirable. And that's one thing that I really, really like about her.
What is, I was looking at the program today and I saw something in there that I missed. When I was looking at Prince's name, I saw first name.
Jane.
Do they mention Jane?
They never mention it. I think it's pseudo mentioned by her relationship with Mama Janie.
Oh, okay.
I think that's part of the reason why they're so close. At least that's what I came up with for myself. Yeah. they are very close because, she's named after her and named after her grandmother, who's also named after her great grandmother, who's Mama Janie. So I think that's just a part of it. But then they never mention it. They call her Princess. They never call her Jane.
And you guys have a great nucleus, Dwayne and Kelly and Cece. Of course, we mentioned Aaron. Just an outstanding cast. Tyrone, since both you and Earl saw the play, Isaac, I wish you had saw it.
Yeah, Isaac would have liked it.
Yeah. Did you see it before?
No. Bronzeville, no, I never saw it.
No, the thing that you were speaking about, the difference between film and theater, the way the theater was set up at the Roby, it was very up close and personal. There was no room for mistakes. And you really played off the character so well.
Thank you.
Yeah. What did you do anything special to prepare for this role, besides what you already mentioned about picking up, and scripting and blocking and so on? But did you, anything in particular to get that naive little girl to come forward?
I think the big thing for me was getting her voice. Because I have this kind of husky, raspy voice. And I don't think it fits for her necessarily.
No.
So I wanted her to have this quality of being like a Southern belle kind of. And they treat her like a princess. Mm-hmm. So I kind of based her character off of a Disney princess kind of, where she has this very ups, she stands very straight and she kind of floats when she walks, and she's mm-hmm. very princessy, and she reads books and she always has books around. And so I kind of thought of Belle from Beauty and the Beast, where mm-hmm. she's very sweet and very, you know, she's a princess. She really is. And they've treated her like that. And even if you, even though she kind of rages against that, which I tried to show, like when she has her feelings for Henry and the scene where her mother tells her that she can't be with her, I tried to make it where she changed. There's a shift in her where she's a little bit more snappy and she's a little less princessy and floaty, but she's very stern in things that she says and things that she does. Mm-hmm. She's very defiant to her parents. So I tried to create this kind of dichotomy between her being this innocent princess, very standing up straight type of Southern girl, to her being very much a woman and saying, no, this is what I want, and you don't get to tell me what I can do for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be different here. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. I played around with that. And I tried to make it so that she didn't have a modern attitude against her parents, but that it was really still set in a respect. Mm-hmm. I thought that the writers did a good job of writing in scenes where she would snap off and her parents would get back in her and she just wouldn't talk for the entire rest of the scene, because mm-hmm. she knows her place. You know, she's never going to be disrespectful. But I thought there were also great moments where they had her speaking up, you know, for herself in that second act especially. So,
yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And two excellent playwrights, Tim Tanyama and Aaron Wolf. Well, Earlene, you saw the play too. Did you have a question for your mom?
I love the play.
Thank you.
I was sitting right there in Mama Jane's garden. Oh. And every once in a while, a piece of Mama Jane's garden would get on our feet and our feet would get in her garden. But it was real intimate. And I said where I could see everything. You know, last time I saw it, I was in an area that I can see so very well. But this time I was set where I could see everything and I heard everything. And it was just great. I especially liked the blocking of the play. Wherever the characters were on stage, you could see all of them at the same time that were on stage.
Perfect.
And also, don't change your voice. I love it. It may not have fit for princes, but most women have this high-pitched voice, and it just irritates me to no end. So whatever you did to get your voice like it is, you know, low and kind of deep like that, whatever.
I was born with a raspy voice. It's really
that's
weird.
That's great. Because that high-pitched voice just drives me. It's like your nails on the chalkboard.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, what we're going to do right now, we're going to come back around for some closing comments because I still have a couple more questions, things I want to talk about. But I'd like to turn it over to Tyrone Robinson for the next segment of our show. I don't know if he still called it Voices from the Ether.
Of course.
All right, course. Tyrone Robinson.
Thank you, Melvin. If it's 15 minutes to 9, then it's once again time to take that curve in the road less traveled and come to the Voices from the Ether. Tonight's in-studio guest is actor, singer, writer, and poet Mr. Isaac Clay. Mr. Clay is going to sing a cappella for us tonight. A cappella has a bit of an Italian
members
history.
Members only.
And he's going to sing for us Members Only.
It's a private
by Bobby
party.
Blue Bland Well.
Don't need no money to qualify. Don't bring your checkbook, bring your broken heart. 'Cause it's members only tonight. Say you lost your woman. Say you lost your man. You got a lot of problems all in your life. Well, they're throwing a party, oh, for the broken-hearted, y'all. And it's members only tonight. Go tell mama, why don't you go tell your daddy, red or yellow, black or white, throwing a party, oh, for the sad and lonely y'all, and it's members only tonight. Yes, it's members only tonight.
Thank you, Isaac.
Members only.
Thank you, Isaac. I ran into you the train after not seeing you for about a year. When I saw you, my mind immediately went to the character Willie from your one-man show, Heaven Can't Wait No More.
No, it's No More.
No More.
You got to be bionically correct.
Bionically correct. Okay. His motivation was his higher power. What's your motivation, Isaac?
It's interesting that you would say higher power because, you know, I'm very grateful to be here tonight, very grateful. But that phrase, I never use that phrase, higher power. I just say Jesus. And when I was about 3 years old, maybe I wasn't even that old. I know this is going to sound unbelievable. I think I was 2 years old, and I lived in Lamont Gardens in Memphis, Tennessee. And back in those days, a lot of people had those fans where the cover of the fan would be missing and the little blades be going around. You know what I'm talking about, Eric?
Yeah.
And we had one of those fans. And I'm 2 years old running around that fan. And I know God said to me, don't get too close to that fan. And I understood at 2 years old, God was saying, don't get, I was pretending like it was a microphone. I was to call myself singing. And then God told me when I was 2 years old, he said, you're going to be a phenomenal actor and singer with phenomenal success. And I was like, I just kept running around the fan. And that was my first experience with God. Then when I got to college, which was quite a few years later, one day we all had to write our own poems. And this guy said to me, a young lady, she said to me, why is it every poem you write is about God? I said, no, that's not true. I was offended. And she said, look at your poetry. I looked at all my poetry. It was all about God. So then I got out to California. Came out here in the touring company at the Broadway musical Raisin because God had spoke to me in Chicago. Before the show even came to town, he said, you're getting ready to go on the road for 1 year in the touring company at the Broadway musical Raisin, and you're going to buy 10 suits. The show, I started saying goodbye to people before I even auditioned. The show came to town. I auditioned. I got a part. I went on the road. I bought 10 suits, just like God said. And God started giving me all this poetry. And a friend of mine, she went to the Wilshire Ebell Theater and told the man, I want to rent this theater because this guy got a play. I didn't have no play. I had a few poems, and she didn't have no money. And the man thought she was crazy. So he said, well, lady, it'll be so much money to rent this place. She said, well, I ain't got no money, but Jesus sent me. And the man said, well, if Jesus sent you, let me show you something. He said, I got IOUs from Marvin Gaye, from the Ink Spots. These are all people who said they were going to pay me. They didn't pay me. She said, well, all I know is Jesus sent me. He said, okay, get back here Saturday with a $200 deposit, and I'll give him a date. Then she went to the print shop. She told the man at the print shop, Jesus sent her to get some tickets, but she didn't have no money. The man said, well, if Jesus sent you, I know I'll get my money. So he gave her tickets. She didn't have a quarter in her pocket. He went and sold $160 worth of tickets. Then we needed $40 more. I went to a place. I sang a song called Spirit Song. The lady gave us $40. Did the play at the Wilshire Ebell Theater. Got a standing ovation. And one lady got up and ran out of the theater at the end of the play. And she told us that she saw Jesus there that night. And he told me to continue to do the play. So I changed the name from Stages and Phases of Blackness to Heaven Can't Wait No More.
Mm. Okay.
I've been doing it ever since. This character, Willie, is the character that's really me in disguise, I guess.
Gotcha. Thank you. Now, you said you were going to read for us tonight the 21st century look at the Ten Commandments. Oh, he has to go to his bag.
It's just right there.
It's right there. Okay, he's going to run to his bag. Okay.
I thought we was going to hear the Paul Robeson piece. The classic Paul Robeson piece since we was talking about Paul Robeson.
Old Man River.
Yeah.
You guys think I only know one song, huh?
No.
Yeah, but that's what we're talking about.
Well, whatever you guys want me to do.
Yeah.
Well, he has a song called What Would I Do Without My Music? It's an old Elvis Presley tune.
Oh, here.
Okay. I'm going to keep, how much time we got here?
We're running.
Okay. Very briefly. I heard this song one night. I was at a place called The Hungry Tiger. I don't know if y'all ever heard of The Hungry Tiger. Good seafood. Mm-hmm. They don't have them anymore. But anyway, this guy had Pete and Sherry, they had a duet. And when Sherry sat down for a minute, Pete sang this song. I said, oh my goodness, that's the most incredible song I've ever heard in my life. So I said, Pete, please give me a copy of that song. He said, on my break, I'll Xerox it for you. So he gave it to me. I was working at the Bonaventure Hotel. Some people broke into my locker and stole the song. And I prayed. I said, God, I really want a copy of that song, because I had changed the words to "What Would I Do Without My Jesus." I have two copies. This guy who wrote the song, I talked to him on the phone. He said, go to April Blackwood Publishing Company, Central City. They'll send you a copy of the song. I had a dream. In my dream, I went to the mailbox, and the song was in a brown envelope. I called April Blackwood Publishing Company and said, I just got cast in Porgy and Bess with Clifton Davis at San Bernardino, you know, Pacific Light Opera. I don't have time to come pick it up. They sent it to me in the mail in a brown envelope. And this is the song. Oh, and God showed me in a dream. I was going around the world singing this song, and people were getting healed.
Let us hear.
Yeah, let's hear the song.
Sometimes I stumble home at night, discouraged, dragging my better dreams behind, wondering if the battle's worth the fighting, and why so many people's eyes are blind. But as I disappear into my music, and the song grows deep inside my soul, I know if God wants me to use it, the striving's more important than the goal. And I think, what would I do without my music? What would I do without my song? What would I do without my music to make it right when everything seems wrong? And as I lose my worries in my music, dreams start rebuilding strong and high. And I know, though I may not be winning, I'm a long, long way from losing if I try. And I think, what would I do without my music? Somebody tell me, what would I do without my song? What would I do without my music to lift me up when all my dreams are gone, to give me hope so I can carry on?
Thank you, Isaac.
All right.
Okay, do you have any upcoming performances? If someone went to get a hold of you, how can they, Isaac?
Isaac Clay, my email. I'm not up on the fancy stuff, Twitter and Facebook yet. IsaacClay1@yahoo.com. And yeah, once again, IsaacClay1@yahoo.com. Or you can call me on my cell phone, 323-301-0582. 323-301-0582.
Okay, thank you for visiting with us this month, Isaac. Voices from the Ether will be back Monday, September the 16th, featuring Vicki Robinson. Now back to our host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson.
Okay, thank you, Tyrone. I just want to mention that last Saturday, August the 17th, was the birthday of Marcus Garvey, Black nationalist, pioneer Black nationalist leader, who was born on August the 17th, 1887, and he passed June the 10th, 1940. Now, I want to get back to Imam. I got a couple more questions that I want to ask you right quick. First,
okay.
I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on the state of African-American theater today?
You know, honestly, I think that it has regressed very significantly. I think that, you know, it started to become this kind of watered-down thing where people are trying to get on, I guess, or take the Tyler Perry route and make these plays that they think a lot of people will come to, and then they'll be able to flip it into films. And it's kind of, I think it takes away from the stage, no pun intended, that you have when you have theater. People come, they come to hear a play. Mm. They come to see it. They know how long it's going to take. And I think it should be good. I think you do a disservice when it's bad. So I think right now African-American theater is in dire need of telling true stories and not telling our stories for the sake of other people to enjoy them, but telling our stories because our stories just need to be told. Mm-hmm. And I think that right now it's a lot of our stories being told for the enjoyment of other cultures. And I think that's great. I hope that our stories do touch them. But I think that shouldn't be the first and foremost concern. So, mm-hmm.
What do you think about the need for a national African-American theater? We had one in the 30s with the Federal Theater Project. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that need is there. I think mm-hmm. there's so many young actors who are trained and have nowhere to go where people appreciate being trained young African-American actors and actresses. So I think that having something like that would give people something to work towards. You know, mm-hmm. I went to school at the Guthrie Theater, which is in Minneapolis, and so one of those big regional theaters that people want to work at, and I think it would be great if we had something like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, just a couple more things. What are your thoughts on the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin verdict, since it impacted your generation so much?
Yeah, I think that is one of the most disappointing things that has ever happened in my generation. I think it's such a slap in the face to us because I think our generation really rallied behind that. I think because it could be any of us. It could be our brothers. It could be us. Like, you know, I wear hoodies all the time. Like, that's what I wear. It's a part of my thing. And I'm from Detroit, so I have a lot of cousins mm-hmm. and brothers mm-hmm. and uncles or whatever who dress like that. So I would hate to believe that someone could profile them, stalk them, and murder them and be set free and given back the weapon that they used to murder them, and for there to be no real reason, and for people to look at a life and, one, decide that it's not worth living or fighting for, and then for, two, to decide it's not worth protecting. I was very, very, like, affected by it. It took me, like, 4 or 5 days to not be affected. Mm-hmm. I was very angry, and I was very hurt. And for someone who I don't know at all, I felt a grave sense of like we failed his family and failed him. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's just another reminder of how far we still have to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what are some of the projects that you're working on now? What are you working on?
I am working on a cartoon, actually. I taught myself how to animate. And so I have a cartoon about a female rap artist that I'm looking for a producer for, backers for it. And I'm thinking about taking to Kickstarter. I'm not sure yet, but mm-hmm. I've animated 3 episodes. And I have a full season of her and her happenings in Los Angeles. And, yeah, there's never been an animated show created by an African-American woman. And there really haven't been that many African-American characters on animated shows either, except the Boondocks, but they didn't really have that many female characters on it.
No.
And
no, they
didn't. Right. So yeah. I am doing an animated show. I have a short film that I wrote with a friend of mine, and we're getting ready to shoot that. And then I have a feature film that I'm working on with a friend of mine from college about 2 actors who decide to go to jail to have free room and board while they work on a project.
Orange is the New Black.
I don't like that Orange is the New Black came out before because we've been working on this for a long time. But it's not in the same vein. She had to go to jail. These two are choosing to go. And they use it as a way to kind of save money.
Save money. Okay.
Yeah. So what kind of shout-out you would like to say to your Bronzeville cast, your family over there?
I love my Bronzeville cast, especially, you know, the people that I worked with for both performances, like Dwayne and CeCe and Jeff and Dana. Dana, hi, Dana. I love Dana. They supported me, especially the first time I did it. I had never done it, and they supported me. They brought me in, and they let me work and make mistakes and all those things. And then this time, they kind of let me take Princess in a new direction. There were so many things I didn't want to bring that mm-hmm. last performance in, and they didn't expect me to, which was nice. They weren't like, well, I like that thing you did last time. They kind of mm-hmm. let me find new things. And then for the new people who came in, Kelly and Aaron, like they came in and they were amazing. They really helped so much mm-hmm. bring it all together. So thank you. That's always good to have a cast that's supportive and, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Any contact information for those who want to get into contact with you, ask your questions?
Sure. I have a website. It's Iman, I, M as in Michael, A, N as in Nancy, N as in Nancy, Milner, M as in Michael, I, L as in Larry, N as in Nancy, ER.com. That's my website. And there's a contact portion on there that comes right to my email account. Mm-hmm. So if you want to email me through there, you can do that. Facebook, I'm just Iman Milner. And Twitter, I am Best New Actress. So at Best New Actress is my Twitter. And then Instagram, people are on Instagram. My name is Iman and Milner, same thing. So everything is pretty much the same except Twitter. But you can type in my name, Iman Milner, and Twitter, and Best New Actress will come
you
up.
You find her.
Thank you, Iman Milner.
Thank you.
Hey, enjoy this event. Tyrone, you want to have a closing comment?
One of the things you say on your website is you're a world changer.
Yes.
In brief, world changer.
Yeah. I just believe that if you use the talents that you've been given and you use them the right way, and it's not just about you, that you can change the world. Because I think if you can change people in it, then you can change the world. Because if I inspire one person to do better work, or if I inspire one person to follow their dreams, then they're going to inspire the next person. So I believe things like that are our domino effect. And so I don't think you have to be feeding orphans. I think that's great. But I think if your thing is your talent and you use that the way you're supposed to and you use it, you know, you put a message in your work and you reach out to people and you come and you do things like this and you talk openly about what you're good at and things that you feel and you talk about issues like the Zimmerman verdict and you just use what you have, then you make a difference. And so to me, that's what I always try to think about when I'm doing anything, is that somebody needs to see it. Somebody needs to hear it. And so, yeah, that's what I think it is.
Thank you.
Okay. And I just want to mention, we had Isaac on here on Paul Robeson's birthday, and he sang the beautiful, beautiful song, Old Man River. Okay. I would just like to offer our condolence to the family of blues musician Artwork Jamal, who passed a little over a week ago. And last September, Drama Stage Qumran and the Qumran Report produced his blues concert at the Exchange. So Artwork Jamal, rest in peace.
Yes.
Next week on the Qumran Report, we will have Lynn Manning, Artistic Director of the Watts Village Theater. I would like to extend a special thanks to Iman Milner, Isaac Clay, and my co-host for today, Tyrone Robinson, and also sitting in my regular co-host, Earlene Anthony. Now, please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, Stitcher, and skitrow.la. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shante.
All right.